Welcome to Smart Talk. I'm Scott Lamar, broadcasting from my home studio. Coming up later in the program, we'll be joined by congressional candidate Todd Rally. But up front, the Wolf administration has released a health reform plan designed to improve affordability and access, and that might also tackle health care disparities in underserved communities. Joining us on today's program to talk about it, Dr. Doug Jacobs, Chief Innovation Officer with the Pennsylvania Department of Human Services. Dr. Jacobs, welcome to the program.
Thank you so much, Scott. It's good to be here.
And also Antoinette Krause, who is Director of the Pennsylvania Health Access Network. Antoinette Krause, good to have you on the program again.
Good to be here, as always.
If you have a question or comment, give us a call, 1-800-729-7532. Send an email to smarttalk@witf.org. On Twitter, we are at SmartTalkWITF. Again, that phone number, 1-800-729-7532. Dr. Jacobs, I had a brief description of what the governor is has laid out here, but tell us the idea behind it, what you're trying to achieve.
Sure thing. So the Wolf administration is really trying to create a healthcare system that's more affordable, emphasizes value, and promotes equity throughout, tackling those disparities in disadvantaged communities. And so there's different components that address each of those elements, but that's the overall goal.
So, Antoinette Krause, the Pennsylvania Health Access Network, this has been one of your main issues, maybe your main issue over the last few years. What's different about what is being proposed by the Wolf administration right now?
Yeah, so, you know, we know that Pennsylvanians have been struggling with rising healthcare costs. You know, business owners, everyday Pennsylvanians, you know, we struggle with rising healthcare costs at our organization. So, you know, we're really excited about this plan because it would actually, you know, establish a way to bring providers and payers together and bring transparency into the system. And, you know, we've seen it work in states like Massachusetts where that actually helps drive down healthcare costs that, you know, everyone benefits from.
Dr. Jacobs, driving down healthcare costs, I mean, the Affordable Care Act, its name itself, Affordable Care Act, it was designed to keep healthcare costs down. What can be done to do that, to keep healthcare costs down?
Yeah, that's a great question. And the Affordable Care Act, we're really in a better place now because of it. We've seen healthcare insurance be expanded to 20 million more Americans. Many hundreds of thousands of Pennsylvanians have access to care and wouldn't have otherwise if it wasn't for the Affordable Care Act. Access to care and health insurance is a really important piece of the puzzle, but it's not the only piece of the puzzle. We've still seen healthcare cost growth over time, and that leads to out-of-pocket payments for consumers in terms of copays, deductibles. And so I think that adding a new layer of transparency, just monitoring all payers, providers, and how healthcare costs are growing over time to make really the entire system accountable for healthcare costs is something that only certain states have done, and it has been pretty successful in terms of controlling the healthcare cost growth over time. So the reference to Massachusetts that Antoinette just said, in Massachusetts, after passing a similar law, they saw savings in the commercial market by about $7.2 billion over the course of 6 years. So it works, and we're really excited to potentially bring these changes to Pennsylvania businesses, consumers, to really be able to more afford their care in the future.
Dr. Jacobs, you're in a unique position in that not only working for the State Department of Human Services, but as a physician. What do you see? What is driving the increase And I mean, it has been significant over the past decade or so. What is driving the cost of health care?
So there's been, starting from my perspective as a physician, I see the effects of people not being able to afford their care every time I go into the office. It's the mother who has HIV, but can't afford her food for her children, and so decides to spend that money on food as opposed to her HIV medicines. It's that person who I order a CT scan for, but never really follows up and gets it. And so there have been actually some pretty good studies looking at so what the issues are in the United States versus other countries. And there's been some conventional wisdom in the past that maybe it's that in the United States we do more. We have more inpatient admissions or something like that. It actually doesn't seem to be that way. The studies are pretty convincing that the price of healthcare in the United States is really out of control and way higher than in other countries. We spend more than 17% of our GDP on healthcare compared to about 8.8%, which is the OECD average. And there's not a lot of transparency or downward pressure on prices in the United States today. And so adding that layer of transparency and creating some kind of downward pressure in some ways, not to overall cap spending, but to just say that we know that healthcare costs are going to grow, but we really need to, quote, like bend the cost curve to really make prices affordable for everyday folks.
So are you saying what you're advocating is more transparency in what a procedure, for example, cost or a doctor's visit cost, that the patient can become a consumer and base their decisions on what something cost?
So that's an important piece of it, but it's not the only piece. It's also to just make sure that large provider entities like hospitals, health systems, large provider organizations, that if all of a sudden they decide to increase their prices 10% in a year, we'll be able to know that as a state. And what was proposed is called this Health Value Commission. The Health Value Commission would be able to look at that aggregate data of prices. And this new layer of transparency would allow the commission to say, Why are these prices increasing so much? Like, what are the root causes? And they would have the authority to put into place a performance improvement plan to bring those costs under control. This would be new and create kind of an accountable system so that large provider organizations, but also payers, are all being accountable for healthcare costs, not pointing the finger at any one entity, but rather it's the entire system that they should really make sure that we do this better.
I want to clarify by going back to something else you said about patients you have seen that you may order a CT, they can't afford it, or HIV medication can't afford it. Are you saying that what ends up happening is when those patients don't follow through, that the condition worsens and that the costs go up because of that?
Absolutely, yeah. If people aren't getting appropriate care, which oftentimes starts with a primary care doctor and seeing them regularly and making sure you get all your preventative screenings, the costs can actually absolutely go up when folks need to go into the emergency department or be admitted to a hospital because they didn't really take care of their condition earlier. And ultimately, it just leads to worse health outcomes. And we want to make sure that we're improving people's health. And so making sure that we have a strong foundation in preventative care and primary care is an important piece of that, absolutely.
Antoinette Krauss, I'm going to ask you the same question. Why do you think that, and maybe just add to what Dr. Jacobs said, but why do you think that healthcare costs have gone up so much?
Yeah, and I echo what Dr. Jacobs said. And we actually looked specifically at individuals in Pennsylvania. So we did a survey last year that looked at, you know, how are folks struggling with rising healthcare costs? And, you know, no surprise, one in two Pennsylvanians said they were struggling to pay healthcare costs. And when we dug into that, almost half of them experienced a hardship or a burden. So you know, we know that 29% of folks delayed going to a doctor, having a procedure done. You know, another quarter avoided going altogether to the doctor. And, you know, we also see things like skipping prescription drugs, cutting pills in half. And that really exacerbates our healthcare system, right? So people get sicker, the costs go up, and care just becomes even more unaffordable. And I think in addition, we have a very changing landscape in Pennsylvania. So we're seeing, you know, a lot of hospital mergers, provider consolidation, acquisition. You know, in a lot of cases, that also drives up healthcare costs. And, you know, Pennsylvania has few tools to bring transparency into the system, right? So, you know, a hospital decides to buy up a provider. You know, we saw, you know, the fight in Philadelphia around Hahnemann, and, you know, we closed a hospital in a neighborhood that really needed care. And there was no transparency in that process or checks and balances. So also part of the Healthcare Value Commission will be to perform reviews upon notice of mergers or acquisitions to understand the impact of what that could mean for communities and the cost of the system. So, you know, I think that's another thing that has also attributed to rising healthcare costs, in addition to folks just not being able to afford it and delaying care altogether.
You're listening to Smart Talk on WITF, your home for NPR News and all things regional. I'm Scott Lamar. Welcome back to Smart Talk. Our guest today, Dr. Doug Jacobs, Chief Innovation Officer with the Pennsylvania Department of Human Services, and Antoinette Krause, Director of the Pennsylvania Health Access Network. If you're just tuning in, we're talking about actually a commission and two councils that Governor Wolf has appointed to look into making some healthcare reforms to try to tackle access to healthcare, affordability, and also providing more help to those vulnerable populations. If you have a question or comment, give us a call, 1-800-729-7532. Send an email to smarttalk@witf.org. On Twitter, we are at smarttalkwitf. Phone number, 1-800-729-7532. So, Dr. Jacobs, as I just said, what the governor has done has appointed two councils and come up with a health value commission. You both have talked a little bit about the health value commission. Let's talk about what the goals are, what these three entities are trying to do. Let's start with the Interagency Health Reform Council. What will that do?
Sure. So the Interagency Health Reform Council, it's really its goal is to have all the agencies come together at the same table and really focus on finding efficiencies in our healthcare system. There's a lot of efficiencies to be gained because the Commonwealth overall spends a lot of money on healthcare, and there's a lot of agencies that have a hand in that healthcare spending. And so by coming together and thinking more collectively across agencies, there can be some efficiencies to be obtained. So, for example, maybe there are some medications that we can get a better price on by purchasing more in bulk, for example. And so that's kind of the idea in the short term, but there's also, we know, so much to be gained for promoting whole person care. And when I say whole person care, I mean not only physical health, and it's not only physical health, it's also behavioral health. It's making sure that we look at healthcare disparities and the social determinants of health, which means things like food and housing. And so to really address all of those, it does take multiple agencies working together. And so that's the goal of the Interagency Health Reform Council.
I understand that the initial goal will be to develop recommendations by December 30th to find these efficiencies. Just a question, and I'm not, you know, this is not to be a smart aleck or anything, but, you know, efficiencies in government, finding efficiencies, that's a good thing, obviously. What's taken so long? I mean, this is something that seems like it could have been done years ago.
Yeah, well, it's, I mean, I think it's important that we think more collectively now. The way that government is structured in any state is not always is important for some reasons, and there's some historic reasons for how government is structured, but the coming together and really making sure we work across agencies, this is to say that not only are we trying to make sure that the payers and providers are accountable, but we're also looking inwards as state government, saying, what can we do to make things more efficient? And I think that the Wolf administration in particular has done a good job of trying to control healthcare costs where we can and finding those efficiencies. And this is just another piece in that puzzle to really make sure that moving forward we're being as efficient as we can and being good stewards of taxpayer dollars.
Antoinette, where do you see efficiencies that can be made?
Yeah, so I think, you know, we're excited by the Wolf administration's initiative. And I think, you know, we can't ignore the fact that we're in the middle of a health pandemic, and COVID has really brought a lot of health disparities to the forefront. You know, everyone's struggling in terms of budgets, whether you're the state of Pennsylvania, a school district, a business owner, you know, or an individual who's worried about healthcare costs. And I think, you know, what we're seeing is everything's connected, right? So if I can't feed my family, I will skip a visit to a doctor. Or, you know, I often tell the story about a gentleman that we helped enroll in health insurance coverage. And, you know, we followed up with him and, you know, he went to the emergency room because he skipped taking his medication. And, you know, when we dug in, we said, you know, what's going on? We got health insurance. We connected you with your doctor. And his reasoning for going to the emergency room was it was the middle of February. It was cold outside. And he knew if he didn't take his medication, he would end up sick enough to go to the emergency room and have housing. So he would be admitted to the hospital for, you know, a few days, and those were days then he didn't have to worry about sleeping on the street. So I think it's important to look at, you know, cross programs, cross systems, and how do we address this whole person healthcare? And by doing that, you start to really tackle, you know, the disparities that we've seen, Lane's there, and COVID that we knew existed, but also, you know, how do you address those inefficiencies and address each part of a person's health? And by doing that, you know, it helps align programs, save money, and really make sure folks get the care they need.
All right, let's take a phone call from Duncan in Lebanon. Duncan, you're on the air.
Hello, Scott, and hello, panelists. This is an important issue. I am actually a retired medical doctor, and in 2017, after all the politicians in Washington started to tackle the issue of repealing and replacing Obamacare, I started a blog on this very issue called fixushealthcare.blog, trying to figure out all the things that you guys are talking about today. And I've been furiously blogging away, and I tell you what my current conclusion is, which is that everything that you guys are saying is exactly right, that the healthcare system is death by a thousand cuts. But zooming up to the 10,000-foot level, what I think we really have here is a rigging of the whole system. And what I mean by that is that the whole structure of cost driving is baked into the system in many different ways, and it has really to do with political power, meaning that this is one-sixth of the economy. There are lobbyists. There's, you know, PAC money going into it. And it all reinforces the structure brick by brick. Every one of us, including doctors, patients, the CT scanners, the hospital systems, just get a little bit more of a price on everything we do. So, again, the bottom line is that there really needs to be a big political solution. That's one man's humble opinion.
So Duncan,
the panelist.
Okay, but before you go, just out of curiosity, what you're describing is a broken system.
Exactly.
Would you agree with
exactly
it?
My conclusion?
Mm-hmm. Duncan, thank you very much for your phone call. Antoinette, let me ask you what you think of what Duncan had to say. Is it a broken system? Is there too much here to tackle?
So I agree with Duncan that we need to start tackling parts of the system, right? And the Affordable Care Act was a great first step, right? It helped folks get coverage. it addressed costs slightly, but, you know, it didn't do everything that we needed to do, right? So now we're struggling with rising healthcare costs, and we've built a system where there's very little transparency and accountability, and we're seeing prices reflect that, right? So we need to really work and tackle these issues, and, you know, the public wants it. You know, in the survey we did last year, 9 out of 10 Pennsylvanians want their elected officials to tackle rising healthcare costs, and they want more transparency in the system. You know, I'm also a consumer of healthcare, and it is impossible to find out, you know, half the time, you know, how much a procedure will cost in advance or an X-ray. So, you know, if you're someone that has a deductible or cost sharing, you know, it's really hard to find that information, and it's so different across providers, right? So it might be $100 at one and, you know, $8,000 at another. So I think, you know, this is a great first step, the Affordable Care Act, and the Wolf administration will go further and help bring transparency and accountability to the system so we can start, you know, looking at the true drivers of healthcare costs.
Dr. Jacobs, will it take a political solution?
Well, I think that the part of what we're proposing is with this Health Value Commission would require legislation. And so I think that legislation could be very powerful and really do a lot to rein in those healthcare costs, to add that transparency and to hold folks accountable. And part of what Duncan is referencing is a lack of transparency, a lack of accountability. And we think that in many ways this legislation would help get us there. So I think that working with the legislature, we hope to really to move this idea forward because, as Antoinette just mentioned, you know, Pennsylvanians really want this. And I know I see my patients that it's very frustrating when I can know the body's physiology better than anyone. I can know what the treatments are that they need to have. But if at the end of the day they don't have enough money in their wallets to afford what I'm suggesting, is the right medical thing to do, they can't get it. And that's extremely frustrating because those are, for me, that's the hardest patients to take care of. And so I think that the solutions that we're proposing would really be a very important first step.
Regional Accountable Health Councils. What are those, Dr. Jacobs?
Sure. So one of the main issues of in terms of health in Pennsylvania, as it is in many states throughout the entire country, is the tremendous variation of life expectancy on the basis of where you're born. So, for example, if you're born in North Philadelphia, in certain neighborhoods, your average life expectancy is 64 years. If you're born just a few miles to the south, your life expectancy goes up to 87. And that's a 23-life-year difference. That's extremely profound. And just as some context, if we were to eliminate heart disease altogether, that would be a gain in life expectancy by about 4 years. So 23 years just based on the block that you're born, and that's not just Philadelphia, that's true in so many other communities throughout the state. And so the Regional Accountable Health Councils, what they are is essentially saying that this problem and all the inequities that we're seeing are so profound, they're bigger than any one payer, any one provider, and even any one agency. And so it's really going to take getting everybody around the same table to look at these disparities and to coordinate and think through a strategy for how to address them across the entire healthcare system to meet the magnitude of the problem. And so that's the idea behind the Regional Accountable Health Councils. And they're being stood up initially through Medicaid. So we look forward to kind of starting to work together with all stakeholders to start to make headway on these disparities.
We have a question from a listener, and quite frankly, it was a question that I had as well. Who will be on these commissions and councils?
Sure.
And I'm not looking for names, but the listener was concerned that we had diversity, that we had a cross-section of the state, that everyone was represented at the table.
Absolutely. So I know we were just talking about the Regional Accountable Health Councils. So those would be, as mentioned, it would be not only all of the Medicaid payers, but also the large hospitals, the mental health and behavioral health providers, And it would also be the consumers, which we know are so important, but also entities that haven't historically been a part of the healthcare system. We know, especially during the pandemic, that community-based organizations have done wonders in addressing food and housing for folks. And so making sure that they have a seat at the table, but also those trusted community institutions like schools, libraries, maybe it's a local church or a barbershop, like they deserve a seat at the table too, and are oftentimes the most trusted partners. And so there's also, in the creation of the regional tribal health councils, we're stipulating that it should really reflect the diversity of the region as well. And so I think that we're trying to be as diverse and inclusive as possible, particularly because we know that a lot of these disparities are falling along racial lines. And these disparities go back to the 1930s and 40s when we actually had maps that were redlining certain communities. And it's those same communities today that are experiencing such profound disparities. So that's the Regional Tribal Health Council. The Interagency Health Council is, the Interagency Health Reform Council is primarily going to be the agencies. And also the governor's office is on that as well. And then the final piece, the Health Value Commission, that would be comprised of experts in healthcare markets, both appointed by the governor, by the legislature, and then also the agency heads would sit on that as well. So hopefully that adds some clarity.
You mentioned consumers will be represented. Who will represent consumers? Because I go back to Duncan's call, and a lot of those who would be at the table are in the system. So who will be representing consumers and say, this is what patients are going through, this is what consumers are going through, what about this, what about that?
Sure, yeah. So by consumer, oh, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, so, you know, we represent a consumer-based organization, and I think there's a lot of, you know, great organizations across Pennsylvania and different parts of the state that, you know, we will advocate to be at the table, right? And, you know, part of our mission and why we exist is to, you know, push policymakers in these decisions to make sure that, you know, there's folks at these tables that are conflict-free, that represent everyday Pennsylvanians, so that, you know, decisions aren't being made by just experts or, you know, that aren't conflict-free as we look to really implement these policies.
Are you willing to call out some of these so-called experts, say, no, that's not what consumers want?
Absolutely. So I think, you know, we have experience. We often do that, right? And, you know, we support all of these proposals put forth by the Wolf administration. And at the same time, you know, as the Health Value Commission moves through the legislature, you know, we'll be watching and making sure that, you know, consumers are at the table. Because for these systems to really work, we need to make sure that the interests of everyday Pennsylvanians, small business owners, are at the table in these discussions. Because for a long time, folks have been, you know, shut out of the system. And, you know, they're the ones that are struggling with rising healthcare costs and delaying care. So, you know, we want to make sure that those voices are heard in these discussions. And I think, you know, we see the Wolf administration's commitment to that, but we'll continue to push and make sure that that doesn't get lost as we go through the process.
Antoinette, final question. You're at the table, and I'm just describing a scenario here. You're at the table. What's the very first consumer issue that you would bring up, concern of consumers that you would bring up?
Yeah, I think it's the lack of transparency in the system. So I think, you know, as health insurance has developed over the years, individuals have a lot more skin in the game, right? So we're seeing more, you know, high deductible plans, co-insurance, and, you know, little ways for individuals to figure out what healthcare costs, you know, as you're shopping for coverage. So, I mean, I think we would really push to make sure, you know, that as we're looking at cost growth rates, that, you know, transparency is really there for individuals and their families, and that we really start, you know, tackling those pieces to drive down costs.
Dr. Doug Jacobs is Chief Innovation Officer with the Pennsylvania Department of Human Services. Antoinette Krause is Director of the Pennsylvania Health Access Network. Thank both of you for being with us today.
Thank you. Thank you. Really appreciate it.
You're listening to Smart Talk on WITF, your home for NPR News and all things regional. I'm Scott Lamar.
For a deeper look at the changing tide of healthcare, check out WITF's Transforming Health online at transforminghealth.org, a partnership of WITF, WellSpan Health, and Capital Blue Cross.
The Senate Judiciary Committee is scheduled to begin hearings for Supreme Court nominee Amy Coney Barrett, President Trump, to fill the seat of Ruth Bader Ginsburg, who died in September. Special coverage begins Monday at 9 on WITF, so that means there will not be a Smart Talk Monday morning. We will have Smart Talk Monday evening at 7 o'clock, and these hearings are scheduled to take place throughout the week next week, but there will be Smart Talk programs at 7 p.m., so we will have programs. WITF's Election 2020 coverage on Smart Talk continues today. Democrat Todd Rally is running for the U.S. House of Representatives in the 13th Congressional District. The 13th District includes portions of Adams, Bedford, Blair, Cambria, Cumberland, Franklin, Fulton, Huntington, Somerset, and Westmoreland counties. The incumbent running for a re-election in the 13th Congressional District is Republican John Joyce. Congressman Joyce has not responded to our invitation to appear on the program. These conversations with candidates are designed to give voters an opportunity to hear where they stand on the issues before this fall's election. Todd Rally, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much. Thank you, WITF and Smart Talk, for the opportunity to speak with you and the listeners this morning. Thank you.
Well, tell us about yourself.
Well, you know, I'm joining the listeners from the farthest western portion of PA 13. My family and I live here in Jones Mills, Donegal Township in Westmoreland County. And Westmoreland County is one of those counties that are part of PA 13 that just includes just the eastern swath of Westmoreland County. And as you pointed out, the PA 13 district runs all the way eastward to Gettysburg in Adams County, a total of 10 counties. Seven of those counties include the full complement of each of those counties, and three of those counties are just a portion. Of course, Westmoreland, Cambria County, which PA 13 really just covers really the city of Johnstown, and then just a portion of Cumberland County, the Shippensburg area. So I'm joining you from Westmoreland County, and I grew up not far from here on a family farm in Myersdale in Somerset County. I had the opportunity to go to college and go off and see the world, and about 6 years ago, I made a decision to move my family back here to southwest Pennsylvania, to the Laurel Highlands, where it's a part of I think it's a part of me. It's the farmlands and the rolling hills of southwest and central Pennsylvania that I've always been drawn to, and I like to tell people it is part of my DNA. You know, I spent nearly 30 years in law enforcement, first as a police officer, then as a state trooper and a flight paramedic, and then over 24 years of that nearly 30-year career in public service as an FBI special agent, the last 15 years of which I spent at FBI headquarters working within the counterintelligence and counterterrorism division. So I know intimately the threats that our country faces, both from a hostile foreign government aspect as well as from a domestic standpoint, which we have seen just yesterday with the FBI making arrests of American citizens who were plotting to kidnap and potentially kill a sitting governor of one of our states. So I'd like to reassure folks that despite the belittlement and the demeaning that we hear from this administration and directed towards law enforcement, the FBI, and the U.S. intelligence community, I have colleagues that are still on the job that are protecting our country, protecting the American citizens from that next terrorist attack. And we see that happening, you know, just as an example from yesterday. Mm-hmm. So I just want to reassure that those men and women, those brave men and women, FBI agents, local state law enforcement, they have an allegiance to the Constitution and to the American people, not to any individual political leader or any attorney general, but they have that allegiance to our Constitution. And
so why are you running? Why are you running for Congress?
Yeah, you know, first and foremost, it is an honor and a privilege to be a candidate for Congress, to represent the hardworking families of Pennsylvania's 13th Congressional District. And I'm running for elected office for two fundamental reasons. First and foremost, I care about my fellow citizens. I care about the well-being of families across PA 13. The COVID-19 pandemic has caused this devastating public health and economic crisis, the likes of which, you know, we have never experienced in our lifetime. And until we as a country recognize that we each must take on the responsibility to adhere to those established public health and safety guidelines, you know, those simple things, wearing a mask when we're out in public and observing social distancing and washing hands frequently, those three things. Can you imagine if we had that leadership and that direction and that message of unity back 9 months ago, where we would be as a country? But yet here we find ourselves, you know, Americans, we continue to suffer, and our economy will continue to struggle to recover. You know, we can do this, but it requires strong leadership with a comprehensive plan to properly manage this crisis to lower the infection and fatality rate. And, you know, that second fundamental reason is, like all Americans, I care deeply about our country. I care about the preservation of our democracy, the fundamental principles of equal branches of government, a system of checks and balances, the ability of citizens to participate in our electoral process without intimidation or fear or efforts to suppress their voice. And certainly the rule of law, where no person is above the law. Those are the fundamental reasons why I'm running for this office.
So what are your priorities if elected?
So first and foremost, as I alluded to, until we have strong leadership in place, and I believe that Joe Biden and Kamala Harris will provide that strong, competent leadership in order to put a comprehensive plan in place and strategy and leadership. It all comes down to leadership, and we've had a significant failure of leadership from this current administration when it comes to this managing of this deadly pandemic that our country is suffering through right now. So first and foremost, I support and I urge Congress and the White House to please, please pass that fundamental, necessary relief and stimulus package that the American people and our small businesses so desperately need right now. Get that done. There's no reason why, as a supplement to the Bipartisan CARES Act, that we cannot find common ground to pass that legislation like the HEROES Act. That is priority. That has to be priority right now, because, you know, as we see our scientists, our medical health experts in the data, we see the uptick again in the infection and, unfortunately and sadly, the fatality rates. We have to get control and we have to manage this situation, and it has not been done. And I look back, and we all know from hearing the president's own voice on the Woodward tapes, he knew how infectious and dangerous this virus was and is, and yet he made a decision not to trust and have faith in the American people, that we, as the American people, we could rally together and we could take on and defeat this virus. Yet he chose to keep that information from us. He kept that information from the American people that would have been able to allow us to make those important decisions to protect ourselves and to protect our families. And that in and of itself is one of the most horrific failures in leadership that I know in my lifetime that I can ever think of from a presidential leadership standpoint.
But you're not running against Donald Trump. Your opponent is Congressman John Joyce. Why are you a better candidate than your opponent, Congressman John Joyce?
Well, I'd like to remind our listeners that my constituent and the constituents of those listeners across PA 13 is a medical physician. I hold Dr. Joyce equally responsible as Donald Trump is responsible to this devastation that this virus has caused our country. You know, for Dr. Joyce to make a decision to be silent with all of the important messaging that he could have put out to the citizenry of PA 13 and to Americans, for him not to have taken those steps, and for him to really be complicit in where we are right now with over 7.5 million Americans infected by this disease and over 210,000 Americans who have perished, that falls right upon Dr. Joyce as equally as Donald Trump. And, you know, the citizens of PA 13, they have a clear choice November 3rd. And as we know, many citizens have already cast their ballots by voting by mail. So I want to make it clear that to the citizens of PA 13, this is my commitment to you, that I will always speak truth to power. I will always speak truth to you, and I will never use rhetoric of fear or untruths or disinformation or certainly hate to divide us as Americans. And my commitment to you is to always place the interests of our country and the American people above any political party, certainly any individual political leader, or any personal self-interest. That's my commitment to the citizens of PA 13. And I think it speaks volumes for Dr. Joyce not to take the opportunity to come on to WITF Smart Talk and share his thoughts, and as a physician, to give us some insight into where we as a country stand as we struggle, as we suffer through this COVID-19 pandemic. Where is Dr. Joyce? You know where Dr. Joyce is and where he has been? He's been a part of this partisan China task force. And according to him, China is responsible for everything that is wrong in our country. And yes, no one is arguing against that this deadly virus originated in China. No one has ever argued against that. But clearly, the inaction and what we know from Donald Trump for his decision to hide that information that he had that American families could have utilized, and for him to think that we as Americans would not have been able to rally together and take on this challenge, yet his thought of the American people, he thought that we would panic and that we would be fearful.
Hey, Mr. Rowley, I want to interrupt for a moment because I want to get to some issues, and we only have about 5 minutes left in the program. Since you've been talking a lot about the pandemic, let's talk about healthcare. From what I understand, and I want you to clarify here, you support protecting the Affordable Care Act. That's one thing. But I see when I looked at your website, sir, I saw the word universal. What are you advocating as far as health care for the United States?
Yeah, so first and foremost, I believe health care is a basic human right. we're all human beings. We're all susceptible to suffering an injury or being diagnosed with a illness or a catastrophic disease where no person, no family should face financial hardship or potential bankruptcy to receive the medical treatment that they need to live. We're all human. So I believe that healthcare is a fundamental basic human right. It's not a privilege just for the wealthy. And so I believe firmly that every American should have access to affordable quality health care. And I do believe that the Patient Protection Affordable Care Act, the ACA, does provide a vehicle for us, for our country, to move towards a universal health care system.
How do you afford that?
You know, we afford that by, first and foremost, that, you know, we think about Medicare and we think about Medicare for all, and people think that Medicare is free. It's not free. You know, my father, my mother, they're both on Medicare. You know, part of their Social Security, part of their income, they pay every month for that Medicare coverage. We all have to have some contribution aspect in order for us to have that universal health care. And that is all, you know, subject to the income that each of us have, from the low-income citizens in our country to the wealthiest income citizens in our country.
Let me go over a few quick things, because I am running out of time. I only have about 2 minutes. You support a $15 minimum wage, refinancing college loans, also, immigration, pathway to citizenship, rejoining the Paris Climate Agreement, common sense firearm laws. This is a pretty conservative district. Are those issues positions that you think the people of the 13th Congressional District support?
I do. And this is why, because the citizens of PA 13, regardless of political party affiliation, Democrats, Republicans, Independents, the message we are receiving from them is that they want unity. They want leadership that they can trust again, and leadership that will bring some unity and stability back to our society and back to their lives. That's what the citizens of PA 13 want. And those issues, you know, we have more in common than we have differences. You know, when the majority of my fellow gun owners and hunters and sportsmen and sportswomen believe in universal background checks, you know, that speaks volumes. It's, we have to resist the rhetoric of fear that we continue to get bombarded with, that somehow the government's going to take away guns. That's not going to happen. I'm a gun owner. I'm a former law enforcement officer. I will never let that happen should I be so fortunate to be elected to Congress. That's what the people have to resist. They have to resist the rhetoric of fear and untruths and disinformation. And the citizens of PA 13, they do. They want leadership they can believe and trust in again. And that's what I want to provide them. And I'm hopeful that the citizens of PA 13 will give me a look and give me that opportunity to fight for them, fight for the working class here in PA 13, because John Joyce is not going to fight for the working class. He's always going to stand by big business and big pharma. Make no mistake about that. So, citizens of PA 13, you have a clear choice November 3rd. Please, give me that opportunity to represent you and to be that voice for you in Congress who will fight for you.
Democrat Todd Rally is running for the U.S. House of Representatives in the 13th Congressional District. That district includes 10 counties: Adams, Bedford, Blair, Cambria, Cumberland, Franklin, Fulton, Huntington, Somerset, and Westmoreland counties. The incumbent is Republican John Joyce. He has not responded to our invitation. Mr. Rally, thank you very much for being with us today.
Thank you so much, WITF Smart Talk. Thank you so much.
Coming up Monday morning, Judiciary Committee, Senate Judiciary Committee, they start the Supreme Court hearings. We will have Smart Talk, 7 o'clock, 7 p.m. on Monday night.
For a deeper look at the changing tide of healthcare, check out WITF's Transforming Health online at transforminghealth.org, a partnership of WITF, WellSpan Health, and Capital Blue Cross. WITF's election coverage is supported by the law firm of Saul Ewing, Ernstein & Lear.